This work today is a part of a larger project that our team is involved with the Agricultural Health Study. And I'd like, by a show of hands, to see how many people are aware of the Agricultural Health Study. So, quite a few. We wanted to focus today on the high pesticide exposure events results. And all of these results are available on their website, so you can actually download the papers. And there's also a new set of fact sheets, and there's a very nicely done fact sheet in plain English on high pesticide exposure events. So this would be particularly of interest to people who have a population that they serve that they want to have good materials to use. And as an overview, as many of you know, the Agricultural Health Study is a long-term study that investigates the effects of environmental, occupational, dietary, and genetic factors in the health of an agricultural population. And this study provides information for agricultural workers to use in making decisions that affect their health, and it's also being observed and used extensively in the regulatory program. And as you may recall, this study came out of 15 years of retrospective studies in the Midwest, which showed that farmers were generally healthier than others, but they had an unexplained excess of certain cancers. So this study was initially, a prospective study was justified based on those findings. And it focuses on cancer, but it's not exclusively cancer. And you'll see on the website that there are a number of papers that are being published on respiratory effects, including wheeze, which is a surrogate for asthma, and on neurological effects and reproductive effects. So it's a very comprehensive study, and there are many lessons here that are available and useful for the entire agricultural population. The high pesticide exposure event is defined a little bit differently in this study than if you went, for example, to the Poison Control Center. We also use Poison Control Center data and NIOSH sensor data and other data from the literature. So for this study, it is an incident where there was a pesticide that caused an unusual exposure and the person would seek medical attention. So it's defined by the person in agriculture. It's not like a clinically confirmed thing that you would get from the Poison Center. But it's still very helpful because it gives us a sense of what's going on in this agricultural community. So the high pesticide exposure events deal with acute symptoms as opposed to chronic effects. But because the study is focused on cancer, you also get in the same population a look at their chronic health experience. And the chronic conditions may not be noted at the time or may not be realized, but by the design of this study, it is picked up eventually. So they have complete surveillance. Even if you leave the state, the IRS knows where you are and the death index knows if you're still alive or not. So it's a complete cohort ascertainment. Oops. Now, in the examination of the findings, there are a number of factors that were associated with high pesticide exposure events, and some of these have implications for training. One is that the highest proportion of these were reported in people with less experience. And so the sequence of mixing, loading, applying, and cleaning up, and repairing equipment was, if the person was inexperienced, they were more likely to have a high pesticide exposure event. And we should say that this study began in the early 90s, and it spanned the time when there were a number of significant label changes and a change in the pesticides that were commonly used in this population. So some of the OPs were reduced, but because this is agriculture as opposed to residential use, many of the compounds of interest are still used in those that have a high proportion of poisonings. The techniques involved, a safe application can only be learned by experience. It's not something that you only get from book learning, so to speak. So the person that's training the new person is a very important component, and the findings on inexperience suggest that those people may need extra training. The personal protective equipment which is specified on the label, may or may not be used for a variety of reasons. And some of the reasons that were given have to do with the climate and the weather conditions, particularly heat, and whether or not the chemically resistant gloves were available and in a functional form. During the learning phase, accidents or blunders may occur and involve splashing or spilling of materials, or in the cleanup process, or when nozzle hoses are plugged. And in combined use of PPE and precautionary practices are important in reducing the high pesticide exposure events. There are unavoidable accidents which may occur in the sequence of handling pesticides, and these may be responsible for the high pesticide exposure events, which was the case in this study. The applicators who wear their chemically resistant material, it's been shown in studies which are about to be published, did have a reduced body burden when their urinary biomarkers were measured. So that will be one of the take-home messages from those studies, and the algorithm that's used to estimate exposure for the entire population, since the population that was studied with this intensive biomonitoring is a small portion of the total study, that algorithm will be adjusted to affect, to take into account the effect of wearing the chemically resistant gloves. Mage et al., who's a member of our team, had published earlier a model that estimates the probability of a high pesticide exposure event based on a number of factors that were also ascertained in the various questionnaires. And so if we look at A as the accident probability and B over N as a blunder probability, and where N is the number of lifetime applications, we get a relationship which we can use to predict the level of high pesticide exposure events shown here. And when we compare the observed data with the model data, the model was designed to fit the data, we can see that it is a pretty good predictive tool, and it is useful in the process of educating wherever people are applying pesticides. And the unique thing about the agricultural health study is it's a near complete ascertainment of people who obtain a license in a 3-year period for North Carolina and Iowa. So we have no other study in the world of this size and proportion, and we have no other study in the world of this duration and of the myriad of findings. So it's a very valuable resource for the community. Now, the take-home message for a farm worker audience is that the accidents which may result in high pesticide exposure events may occur with or without protective equipment, but the protective equipment, especially the chemically resistant materials, do help to reduce the impact of that accident. And inexperience was found to be one of the factors that contributed, but it's not age per se, it's in terms of experience with the task of applying the pesticides. And the proper initial training is a key to the prevention, so you have an audience that learns how to do it correctly. Other highlights of the study. There are a number of diseases that have been looked at in the study with some very interesting findings with quite a few implications for training. One is that eye disease was found in excess for the applicators, and this is the work of Freya Kimmel and her team at NIEHS. And subsequently, they found that this was also the case for the spouses who were not applicators. So something about farm hygiene was an important factor in this risk for excess risk for macular degeneration. The prostate cancer study, Alavagna et al. In 2003, also had some very interesting findings, and that is that were 50 pesticides that were looked at, seven had an excess, about a doubling of prostate cancer risk, But if the person had a family history of prostate cancer, this is the really interesting part, they had a fourfold excess risk. And so they confirmed these findings in a second group. So they measured the first 900 people, and then they have a second group of people within the same large cohort. And they were able to confirm that finding for all but one of the chemicals, and there's a very interesting story about that. The chemical that was not confirmed was methyl bromide. And one of the things that happened is that population abandoned using methyl bromide fairly early. So they were catching, they believe, the tail end of an epidemic curve. But the other studies so far have confirmed the findings. Approximately 11% of the commercial applicators, although this is a cohort characteristic, so we'll just pause for a minute. So they have both commercial and private applicators in the cohort. And the difference is that the commercial applicators have a higher number of days per year and a higher lifetime exposure compared to the private applicators who are just working on their individual farms. The cohort is largely male because that's who's largely farming in these states. And it has an oversampling of a minority population in North Carolina by a special survey where they went to African American churches and recruited people who were retired farmers because there was not enough diversity in the population that was currently farming. Some other highlights. Oh, it's going backwards. The agricultural health study covers a large number of applicators and a very large number of application events, so over 7 million events, which brings a new level of validity in the use of epidemiology results in a regulatory program. About 3.3 million are for private applicators, and about 1.1 million of the events are for commercial applicators. And during their working lifetime, 14% of this population had at least one high pesticide exposure event, and you could see the difference breakdown by license type. If a person had one high pesticide exposure event, they were more likely to have an additional event in their lifetime. So there may be some selection factors in terms of behavior. Some people may be more risk takers in their approach. The increased rate of high pesticide exposure events was looked at again recently. So this is a recent paper from Erin Bell and her colleagues. They found an increase in the pesticide application days and additional history of pesticide exposure events. Decreasing age was a factor. And if you stored the pesticides in your home, you were more likely to have an event. And if you were not as careful in your hygiene, your personal hygiene, you were more likely to have an event. The symptoms reported are as follows. This is looking at a 12-month period. So we're talking about mainly skin and eye irritation kinds of symptoms, which are typical for the kinds of pesticides that are used on these crops. And underreporting is a known phenomenon with pesticide poisoning surveillance in general. And it was estimated that only 13% of the applicators with symptoms and 22% of the spouses with symptoms sought care. So the proportion of people reporting events is a tip of the iceberg phenomenon. there are a number of surveillance improvements that are in process and more that could be implemented. The frequency, as I said, is between 8 and 13% depending on the group. We work simultaneously with poison centers. And it turns out that an agricultural population, in particular a farm worker population, could report to the poison centers, but don't always. So that's an area, an opportunity to increase prevention efforts to have some outreach in that area. And the poison center data are available for a national network for a comparable population and expand our existing system and could include farm workers. How do we track and foster prevention? Right now, 12 states, including Iowa and North Carolina, most recently added, do report to the NIOSH Sensor Surveillance Program on pesticide poisonings, and there's an opportunity for any other states that are interested because the software is available free, and there's training on use of this reporting. And the required industry self-reporting for incidents equivalent to high pesticide exposure events through the 6A2 section of FIFRA is also an opportunity to improve reporting. There, about 75% of companies use a voluntary form and report events that are of this nature. As I said, the agricultural health study is a prospective design. It has a large number of players and has a number of major components. I've been with the study since 1992 as our collaborator. I think most people are familiar with this. Just go to this. This is just a little look at some of the data. You can see the details on the Agricultural Health website, but it gives you an idea of the size of the total population that's available, and they're in the field now with the third phase of questionnaire, so there will be more data on some of these topics. This gives you an idea of the incident cases of cancer, which are the main focus of the study. This gives additional details. It's been done in several phases. They're in the third phase now. During the second phase, which was concluded in 2003, they asked, instead of asking about 50 chemicals, they asked, what do you use in each crop? So they have a long list of about 4,000 products, which were collapsed to about 189 active ingredients. So the point is that we'll have a much richer database for other chemicals of interest. These were the chemicals in the prostate cancer study that were positive with a family history. So you can see the odds ratios and the confidence intervals. And this is something that is causing a good deal of deliberation within our program. So my summary is that the findings of the high pesticide exposure events in the agricultural health study give us an important source of new information that provides ways for us to identify things that reduce risk for farmers. We can also look at the future of the farm worker and the farmer education efforts. And this is NIOSH, the team. Thank you.